Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. And the host of it and its founder is Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. On today's program, she'll be talking with Beth H. Macy, a consultant and licensed mental health counselor who's going to talk about her new book titled Many Years, Many Worlds, published by BHM Consulting, Inc. But we have something really, really special for you right now to kick the program off. Carol Marx, in conversation with a legend. Bill Medley. He's a singer and a songwriter best known as one half of the Righteous Brothers. He's won a Grammy, a Golden Globe, an American Music Award. He's even won an Oscar. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2003. And he's going to talk to Carol about his just published memoir titled The Time of My Life, a Righteous Memoir, published by DeCapo Press.
You really enjoy this book because we all love the music that we grew up with. So, Bill Medley, the warmest of welcomes to A Touch of Grey, and congratulations on having hit records in four different decades. That's amazing.
Well, it sounds like I'm pretty old.
No, you're pretty young at heart.
Well, I am young at heart.
Yes.
Yeah, no, but thank you. Yeah, it's been a remarkable career, and I'm still at it, and it's, you know, who knew when I was 73 I'd still be doing songs I recorded in 1974, you know,
and
64.
You know, and you have such a loyal group of fans, and now you have some new fans. You certainly inherited musical genes from your parents. Is that why they went along with your recording your first solo songs on two tape recorders in the living room? I mean, that must have been something. They were very patient.
Yeah, my mom was extremely patient. Well, my mom and dad had a band. My dad was from Texas, and my mom was Los Angeles, and they had a band. But when they started having us kids, they kind of put that away, so we weren't really that really wasn't in our life. But there was always a piano in the house, and my mom sang. And back there, probably in about 1960 or 59, a guy asked me to sing a song that he had written because he knew I could sing. And I learned it and sang it for him, and from that moment on, I just became obsessed with music, and I would sit in the living room banging the piano for about 12 hours a day.
Wow.
Just banging it, and I mean banging it, because it was like Little Richard songs, and Fats Domino and Chuck Berry, and taught myself how to play, and I can remember my dad come home and said, doesn't that make you nuts that Bill's in there banging on that piano for 12 hours a day? And she said, at least I know where he is.
Good point. Now, you grew up in Orange County, California,
yeah,
which was the whitest place in the country, and the popular music of the day was by white teen idols like Frankie Avalon and Fabian. So what first sparked your passionate interest in the rhythm and blues music that was being played only on black radio stations?
Well, when I was 15 years old, it was 1955, and I think first time I heard Little Richard, I just thought that was probably the greatest thing I'd ever heard in my life, you know, the energy and all of that. So I just became obsessed with, you know, Little Richard, Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, and we were from Orange County, but if you get your radio just right at night, I could get this black station, KGFJ, up in LA, and it was an all black station. And, I don't know, it just captured my soul, you know. I just loved it. And then when I became about 18 or 19, I got in the, you know, Ray Charles, B.B. King, Bobby Blue Bland, the real, you know, R&B guys. And little did I know that there was a guy about 30 minutes away from me that was doing exactly the same thing, and that was Bobby Hatfield. And yeah, Orange County in those days was white, white, white. And when Bobby and I got together, we both sang rhythm and blues, and we both knew all those songs. And so it was just real natural for us that that's what we did. It wouldn't have been natural for us to try and sing, you know, what Frankie Avalon and those guys were doing.
And the fact that Bobby had a high tenor and you had a low baritone, I mean, that really made a wonderful balance in your duets together.
Well, yeah, I think on paper the Righteous Brothers look all wrong. You know, I mean, we were so opposite. One guy was tall, one guy was short, one guy was blonde, one guy was dark hair, one guy sang high, one guy sang low. And I had written a song back there in 62 called Little Latin Loopy Lou, and became a big hit in the West Coast. It kind of became nationally known. And we weren't really trying to put a group together or anything. Just a record company guy friend of mine came in and saw us at this nightclub where we were performing as the Paramours. And he said, let's record that. And we did. And we didn't even have a name. Where we were working, there was a Marine base, El Toro Marine base, and a lot of the black Marines heard that there was these two white guys down at the club singing rhythm and blues, so they came in to see us, and there was a saying, if they liked something really a lot, they would say, boy, that's righteous, which meant good, and if they liked you as a friend, they'd call you a brother, so they started calling Bobby and I the Righteous Brothers. Sometimes we'd come to work, and they'd say, hey, Righteous Brother, how you doing, which meant good friend.
That's nice. That's really nice and unique.
It was the perfect name for us.
Now, looking back at the people you worked with, one was certainly producer and songwriter Phil Spector, and he was responsible for getting you to record what became the most played song of the 20th century, You've Lost That Loving Feeling. What was it like to create records with him?
Well, everybody, you know, now that Phil's so kind of known that, everybody thinks I'm going to have a horrible story, but back there in 64 and 65, I think he wanted people to think he was eccentric, but he wasn't really as weird as he came off. And in the studio, it was amazing to be in the studio with him because he was just absolutely brilliant. He was the closest thing I've ever met in this business as being a genius. He, Love and Feeling was recorded on maybe three-track, maybe four-track machine. It's a little
innovative.
Technical, but today they have, you can record on 300 tracks if you want. And so to get all of what he did in those days on the three- and four-track machine is pretty pretty amazing, but thank God he went to Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil when he was going to produce us and asked them to write a song for us, and they wrote Love and Feeling, and the rest is history.
It is. And you, of course, were thrilled. It was at a success. It was everything you dreamed of, but it was way beyond Bobby, your partner's comfort zone. Can you tell us what was happening during this time with him? And is that why later on in 1968 your duo broke up?
Yeah, come to find out, you know, when we had Righteous Brothers kind of had two careers. We had the West Coast career where we had all those rock and roll hits. And you know, we were 22, 23, and we were having a ball. We didn't take it serious because we didn't think it was going to last. So we just, you know, had a ball going out, and it was, girls and more money than we needed, and we were just having a ball, and we didn't take it that serious. And then, and that was Bobby's comfort level. That's kind of what he signed up for. And then when we had Love and Feeling, and we were on Shindig, we became nationally known immediately, and it became big business. Now we had a manager, we had agents, we had business managers, and it just seemed to be not Bobby's comfort zone. It was a little stressful and a little too big for him. He would have been happy to just stay where we were. And I can remember when we were at the Sands Hotel in Vegas in the lounge, even though the lounge seated about 500 or 600 people, we were in the lounge and they asked us to go into the main room, leave the lounge and go into the main room because we were doing such big business. And Bobby said, no, I don't want to go into the main room. I want to stay in the lounge. And that's, I should have realized then that his comfort zone wasn't, to be in this big fast lane. He was having a ball where,
that's understandable.
No stress.
That's Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers talking to Carol Marks. By the way, if you want more information, it's BillMedley.com. His book is called The Time of My Life, A Righteous Memoir, published by DeCapo Press. And that's not all of it. We got another part of this conversation coming up next. Carol Marks in conversation with Bill Medley, Part 2, when A Touch of Gray continues.
A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself, because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online, from building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase. Hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Now
continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Michael Harrison here in the anchor seat, and it's Carol Marks again talking with Bill Medley, part two of the conversation. In this part of the discussion, topics include the breakup of the Righteous Brothers and his friendship with Frank Sinatra and Elvis.
Talking about the Sands in Las Vegas, you have so many firsts the Righteous Brothers had, and you were the first rock act to ever play there, and you had to get Sinatra's permission because he was playing in the main room. And I thought it was so interesting what you said about Sinatra and how he kind of took you under his wing when it came to dealing with what he called your read. And you could tell us what that was, and how did he help you?
Well, they took us back to have a picture taken with Frank Sinatra, and they asked us, don't say anything to him, don't bother him, we're going to get the picture and get out of here. We said, fine. So we went back to his dressing room, and his show got over, and he had, every night, he had huge stars, big stars, everybody from Hollywood would come in to see him, and we were in the dressing room, and we took our picture with Mr. Sinatra, and he asked me, he said, how's the reed, which to him meant vocal cord, because a reed is from a saxophone, and him being a big band singer, that's what he called it. And I we were having a lot of trouble because it was in the Las Vegas in the desert. And we, very dry, and we were having a lot of trouble. So he cleared everybody out of his dressing room, told Jilly to send everybody to his suite, and he sat there and talked to us for about an hour and a half. on what to do with our voice and how to, you know, keep it moist. And he said, I want to see you guys tomorrow at 5 o'clock in the health club. And so we went, ended up going to the health club every day. And yeah, he just kind of took us under his wing. And, Sinatra had to okay whoever was in the lounge, because a lot of times he would bring his all the stars that were in his show, he would bring them into the lounge. And we always knew when Frank Sinatra and his people were coming in, because there would be lines to get into the show out at the front door, but there would be a empty row of seats all the way from the stage all the way to the back of the room with a bottle of Jack Daniels at every other chair.
That was appropriate.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
So we knew they were coming in. And,
yep.
But it was great fun to be 25 years old and to be in Vegas and work in the Sands Hotel with the Rat Pack and all of that. You can imagine.
Oh, I can imagine. And you were also a close friend of Elvis. Well, everybody has said they were a close friend, but you really were. And what did you like so much about him? Because he was really different from his manly exterior.
Yeah, I think the thing I fell in love with Elvis probably back then when I was 15. I think it was, I think it was just about Elvis. You know, he was kind of, when you're 15 years old and you want to rebel and you don't want to do your mom and dad's music. And so Elvis was just, he was the cutting edge, even though I loved, the rhythm and blues, but Elvis did too. And, Elvis, the cool thing, I mean, we met and got to know Elvis back in like 63, before Love and Feeling and all that. He would come out and see us. With all of his boys, he would come to wherever we were working and just became friends. And then when I left the Righteous Brothers in 68, I worked at the, when I left the Sands, I went over to the International Hilton there and where Elvis was working. And being there, every time Elvis was there, they put me in the lounge. And I think that was Elvis's idea, and so I really got to know Elvis on a real intimate level, which a lot of people didn't, because a lot of times he would call me, because my show, he would do an 8 o'clock show, I would do a 10, he would do 12, and I would do 2, so a lot of times after his 8 o'clock show, he would call me and ask me to come down to his dressing room when he was getting ready to do his 12 o'clock show. And so I would go down, and it was great because all of his boys, all the Memphis Mafia and all the guys were not in the dressing room. It was just Elvis, me, and his hairdresser. So we, probably spent about, 50 or 60 nights doing that, of just talking to Elvis and, kind of lost track that he was Elvis Presley.
Just a human being. That's the way we should be with everybody. Now, I'm not going to tell our listeners how the story ends up because I want them to read your book, but all I can tell you, it's an amazing story, because one night Bill and Elvis and Priscilla were able to drive away from his house and go to a movie that Elvis wanted to see, and of course, the question is, how was he able to do that? Because we all remember how he was mobbed by his fans. It's a great story, so read the book, and you're going to find out. Now, I want to ask you, Bill, you're 73 years young, and your voice is in great shape. Any idea how you have been so blessed?
Well, I don't know how I'm still doing this at 73, but I am blessed. I think it's because I love the music so much, but in 70, 73 or 74, I was told that I'd never sing again. I lost my voice, and I was doing three shows a night in Las Vegas, and one of the biggest throat doctors, well, the biggest throat doctor in Hollywood, told me that my vocal cords looked like, they looked like hamburger meat, and that I would never sing again. And I ran into my high school choir teacher. I quit high school when I was 16, but that one year that I was there, the choir teacher, you know, he's just one of those great teachers that you hear about that went the extra mile, you know, with the students. And he just was wonderful, and I ran into him in about 73, 74 when my voice was gone. And he said, I think I can fix that. And God bless him. He, you know, I took two lessons a day for 5 days a week, and it was real, real tough to do. But
you did it, and that's what counts. That's right. Do you have a website that lists your upcoming popular shows and where they will be?
Well, yeah, I think it's just BillMedley.com.
Okay.
And I think all the shows, the schedules are on there, and what I'm doing and not doing.
Excellent. And finally, I understand you've just released a new album on Fuel Records. What's its title?
The title is Your Heart to Mine, and it's an album I've been waiting to do for probably 50 years. It's kind of dedicated to all the great black artists that I was influenced by in the 50s, and like Ray Charles, B.B. King, Bobby Bland, and Sam Cooke, and just all those guys. So I took my favorite singers, and I took my favorite song from those guys, and that's what the album is, and that's why it's called Your Heart to Mine.
That's Bill Medley in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled The Time of My Life, a Righteous Memoir, published by DeCapo Press. For more information, go to BillMedley.com. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues with a peek behind the curtain of talk radio next.
You never close your eyes anymore. You're leaving.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined this week, as we are at this time, by Kevin Casey, who's our senior correspondent, as well as being the vice president and executive editor of Talkers and Radio Info, two trade publications in the radio world. Talkers is for talk radio. Radio Info is for music radio. And, Kevin, I gather you heard some of the interview that Carol Marks conducted earlier on the program today with the legendary Bill Medley. I guess that falls under our music radio interests.
Sure did.
And I remember the first time I heard, and I'm a little older than you, so you probably were just a baby then. I was in my teen years. I remember the first time I heard the first Righteous Brothers song on the radio, Bill Medley and Bobby Hatfield, and it was called You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that struck me about it was the production. It was produced by Phil Spector. Did you know that? A lot of people don't realize that the Righteous Brothers were Phil Spector. Everybody thinks of the Ronettes and the Crystals and that.
Yeah, I did know that, but yes.
And the, you never close your eyes. Eh? That just came on. That stuff sounded, I got to tell you, I try to explain this to kids today, and it's hard for them to quite get it, but that Phil Spector sound was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
In the day.
Yeah.
You know, coming through on the AM radio, the mono little AM radio. It filled the speaker. Not that that was hard to do.
Yeah, and it's funny, you mentioned kids, kids these days, or any, actually anyone who's just used to the way that music sounds now, the fidelity we have, but, in the old days, a lot of folks don't know this, that you know, record producers, people who did this stuff and created records, they had to try to make it sound good coming out of one speaker in the center of a dash over an AM radio.
Yes, and they would actually do, many producers did the final mix. That's when they have, you know, all the tracks, and then they'd mix it down to the final mix. They'd mix it listening on a transistor radio-sized speaker.
Yep.
So that all the notes could be heard, because like you lose a few lows.
It's also legendary that in some places record producers would drop by an AM station in the middle of the night and have the disc jockey put it on, so that someone listening in their car driving down the highway could listen to it, take a few notes, and then tell them how it sounded.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Oh, I never heard that. But I would believe that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Phil Spector, though, he was certainly a giant. And I understand, I think he's in prison. I mean, he's...
Yes, he is.
Wow. When you think about that, that's extraordinary how things turn out in the far future. Back in the day when these people were current and happening.
Sure. And, you know, interestingly, Michael, it also goes to show how easy it was to keep a lot of things hid that cannot be kept hidden these days. In the olden times, back when Phil Spector was doing his thing, he was notoriously not known to be a nice guy by a lot of people in the business, but it's not something that went reported.
Yeah, I think back in the days when we had a thing called privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, I believe that one of the biggest issues of the coming years, as we enter the digital age and get deeper and deeper into it, will be the issue of privacy. I really do believe that privacy is something that will be more important if we remember what it is. I mean, you know, it's one of those things you sort of start forgetting. It's that slippery slope.
Yep.
And when people stop thinking that we have a right to privacy, or that the idea of privacy is old-fashioned, I think we're going to be in for big trouble, because privacy is the only way you can escape from tyranny. It's the only way you can escape from all of the ills of the world. Matter of fact, in 1984, the protagonist would find a little place in his house outside the reach of the camera, because Big Brother was always watching you, even at home.
Right.
And he had to sit in the corner somewhere so he could just not be in the camera's gaze. Would you agree there's some merit to this?
I would absolutely agree. In fact, and people are going to fall into it. People are going to be further in, deeper in, when they realize, oh, wow, what have we done?
Yeah, and how do we get out of it now?
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll leave it with that rhetorical question and provocative thoughts, and I do appreciate you joining us. Kevin Casey, the Vice President and Executive Editor of Talkers and Radio Info, radioinfo.com or talkers.com, the place to go. Find out what's going on in radio. I'm Michael Harrison, and A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Michael Harrison here in the anchor chair. And here again is the host of the program, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Beth H. Macy. She's a consultant and licensed mental health counselor, and she's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled Many Years, Many Worlds, published by BMH.
Now, after your mother died in 2006, one of the things you experienced in your grief was a longing to find out more about your mother's past. Then, the day before her funeral, when you were cleaning out her shed, you came across some vital clues about your mother's life. What did you find in that shed?
Well, it was amazing. Tucked away in a corner of the shed, I found an old trash bag box that was filled with leathers, those old tissue paper thin airmail leathers.
Wow. And then, growing up, you had heard a little bit about your parents' involvement in an important piece of history in 1949 and 1950 called Operation Magic Carpet. What was that all about, and how did they get involved in this project? Because a lot of the letters you found were about that.
Yes, Operation Magic Carpet was a, at the time, top secret operation where the newly founded state of Israel was flying the refugees into Israel to help populate Israel. And my dad worked for Alaskan Airlines, and Alaskan Airlines was going bankrupt. So they contracted to Israel to fly the refugees over the war-torn lands where they had recently had the war between the Palestinian wars. It was very hostile territory, and they flew plane load after plane load of refugees from Asmara, Eritrea, into Israel.
And in one letter, your mother did write about the fact that they were flying over very hostile Arab territory, and your dad almost ran out of fuel in his two-engine plane. I wonder why your parents didn't tell you more about the work they did in Israel, and the work they did was just after it had become an independent state.
Yes. I think, you know, one, for my dad, he was an old-school pilot, and for him, it was taking a plane from point A to point B. It didn't matter. He could take it through anything. In fact, they lost an engine over hostile territory and had to land in semi-hostile territory where they couldn't get off the plane while the engine was repaired. So it was a very dicey time. But for Dad, he was just taking a plane from point A to point B. And I once asked my mother, who was, a person who I perceived as a very introverted person, I said, Mom, how on earth did you ever do that? And she said, I loved your dad, dear. I would follow him anywhere.
Wow. Your dad was one of the pilots who flew the Yemeni Jews from their distressed community to their new home in Israel. Weren't you amazed to learn that Leon Uris, the author of that very popular book, which we all read, Exodus, he actually modeled a character in that book after your dad?
Yes, he did. I was amazed, and I'm still kicking myself for not contacting him and finding out more information on how on earth did he know my dad.
Definitely. Now, what memorable flights it must have been, because the Yemeni refugees coming on board the airplane had goats and sheep and chickens, and weren't they building a fire on the floor of the plane? That couldn't have been very safe. Why the fire?
Well, they didn't know what the plane was. To them, they were just hungry. They wanted a meal, and so it was time to cook, you know, their meal. So they built a fire in the middle of the airplane to cook. Luckily, it got put out pretty quickly. They had no clue what this was all about. These refugees had been wandering for a long time. They had been in refugee camps. Many of them were sick, and they were just looking to survive.
Now, talking about the mother-daughter relationship, it's stronger than almost any other. At the same time, it can be more complicated. So were you surprised, because you had a sibling, your sister, that she had completely different opinions about your mother's life and the way she treated her?
I'm always surprised. I'm also a licensed mental health therapist, and I am always surprised to see the different views that siblings have of their parents growing up. And my sister and I are still talking about how different our view is of our parents. I think my sister's was tainted by the fact that the divorce between my parents happened when she was 3. And I was less than 1. So my sister remembered my father and sided with my mother. So she idolized my mother and wasn't too crazy about my father, whereas I got to see them, I think, a little more balanced from not having been so upset by the divorce.
And I think that happens with all siblings in a family. It really depends on the time frame when they were born and their parents' relationship and what was going on at the time and how old they were in relationship to the other siblings. Now, I think it's so important, Beth, for you to emphasize one more time, you know, why it's so important to get that oral history from your parents and loved ones and find out who those people in the photographs they have really were, because guess what? I have in my house pictures of my parents, respective families, and very sadly, I don't know the names of some of my relatives who are in the pictures I have.
And I think that from a personal point of view, we are embodiments of who our parents were, and so it's important for us to know who they were and what traits we have in ourselves that we're carrying from them. It's also the fact that they lived through history, and probably they didn't know at the time. I mean, we're living through history, and to get that oral history really enriches what you learn in the history books in school. And we forget that our elders are someone to learn from. We can really learn what they've been through, and we can really see history in a much richer fashion from them. And then just knowing our parents as people, I think, helps us forgive them. When we're children, we blame everything on our parents. And at a certain point, you become an adult, and it's important to look at your parents as an adult. And I know from reading my mother's letters, I got to know her so much better and got to understand her better.
And, you know, it's really important. The point is, parents really do the best that they can. And your advice, I think, about saving their letters, the parents' letters and the postcards and the photographs and the email that you find, you know, that's really a great thing to do and to keep, because it documents the stories that they have shared with you.
Yes, and I think that there's nothing like, I'm in high tech, and so I do a lot of email and tweets and Facebook and so forth, but there's nothing like that handwritten note. When I pick up a handwritten note from a friend or a relative or my mother or my father, and I see the handwriting, parts of their personality come back to me, and it's almost like holding a piece of them.
Beth H. Macy in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Many Years, Many Worlds, published by BHM Consulting. I'm Michael Harrison. Steve Wiseman joins us to talk about a hospital data breach. That's next when A Touch of Gray continues.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our program, and we're joined customarily by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Stephen J.J. Wiseman, he's an expert on just about all the topics we talk about here, and he is particularly an expert on scams and fraud. As a matter of fact, he's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. His website is called scamaside.com, and he's here now to discuss a hospital data breach. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, medical facilities like hospitals, doctors' offices have become a major source of data breaches, and this has in turn resulted in large numbers of patients becoming victims of identity theft. Now, recently, the Flowers Hospital in Alabama notified an undisclosed number of patients that their personal information, including their names, addresses, birth dates, social security numbers, and health insurance information, had been stolen from June 2013 all the way through February 2014. Now, the hospital's offering free identity theft monitoring services to these people and are giving the victims until June 30th to sign up. And according to a letter sent by the hospital to the victims, a hospital lab employee stole forms from the hospital that contained that information. Recently, a class action lawsuit was even filed against the hospital alleging negligence and other civil violations. Now, why am I telling you this? Because a lot of people aren't going to be affected by this. But this case is just another example of the fact that you are only as safe from identity theft as the places with the worst security that holds your personal information. And it's also important to know, and as I've told you many times before, your Social Security number is the key to identity theft. In the hands of an identity thief, your Social Security number makes it a simple matter for that criminal to steal your identity. Now, we're all routinely asked for our Social Security number when we receive medical services. But here's the truth. The truth is, the medical providers have no need for your Social Security number. The main reason they collect this and ask for this is to make it easier for them to collect on unpaid bills. So in the future, when you are asked by any company or any medical provider for your Social Security number, ask why they need it. If there's no good reason for them to have it, and there usually isn't, offer another form of identification, such as a driver's license number. In that case, if you have a data breach there, yeah, maybe they'll get your name, maybe they'll get your driver's license, but they won't get your Social Security number, and you're going to be much more protected when it comes to identity theft. Another thing that you may want to consider to protect yourself is putting a credit freeze on your credit report. So even if someone does get your Social Security number, they won't be able to access your credit report in order to access your credit. And you can go to scamaside.com and find out how to put that on there.
Steve Wiseman, thank you very much. A hospital data breach. And again, Steve is an expert on scams and fraud. He wrote The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And here's a website, scamaside.com, and here's a new book coming up soon. We'll keep you posted on it. Steve Wiseman, nationally recognized as the enemy of scam artists and expert on these dangerous things that we all face, kind of heightened by the digital age. Always have been fraud and scam artists and con men out there, but now they can really get into your life and your head via the computer. Pretty dangerous stuff. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Beverly Santinello, on the front line producing the program. By the way, if you want to visit our website, it's atouchofgray.com. Lots of information, lots of archives there. Atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. Thank you to Steve Wiseman, as I mentioned before, Kevin Casey from Talkers and Radio Info. And, of course, thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. We thank you for listening. I'm Michael Harrison. On behalf of all of us at A Touch of Gray, please join us again next weekend right here for another installment of the talk show, The Grown-Ups.